Each weekday, a member of the community is invited to Coffee at KYUK to discuss news and information relevant to Bethel and the Kuskokwim Delta. Sometimes light, sometimes serious, Coffee at KYUK is where our community connects.
Hello, hello, hello up and down the Cusco. We're also shouting out to the Yukon and the coast. Grady Deaton here, Coffee at KYUK. I've got my coffee on my sideboard. Not heart healthy with my oatmeal this morning, but I promise before lunch I'll get that in. Joining me on the phone to host the show, Anna Rose MacArthur. Good morning, Anna Rose.
Good morning, Grady.
Have a good show.
Five candidates are running for the open U.S. Senate seat currently held by incumbent Dan Sullivan. KYUK is inviting these candidates to Coffee at KYUK, and today we're speaking with candidate Chris Cummings. Cummings is an independent competing in the Democratic primary. He lives in Ketchikan and ran for Alaska's U.S. House seat in the 2018 Democratic primary, where he won 8% of the vote. This is Cummings' first time running for the U.S. Senate. Good morning, Chris. Thank you for joining us.
Hey, Anna Rose. Thank you. Thank you for having me. I'm really excited to be here today.
And Chris, will you begin by introducing yourself to our listeners in the Delta, telling us about yourself and who you are?
Yeah, sure. So my name is Chris Cummings, of course. I'm 35 years old, born and raised in Alaska. My dad was a trooper and my mom was a nurse, so we moved all around the state growing up. I lived up on the slope and Anchorage, Fairbanks, and then we kind of settled down here in southeast in Ketchikan. And I've been here over 20 years. I went to college at the University of Oklahoma and got a BA, bachelor's in political science. And then I got married to a amazing woman, and we have a 8-year-old son. He just turned 8. And so that's, the really brief rundown of me. I work at a local nonprofit. We provide, services to the disabled and the elderly. And so, my life is I'm nobody notable or special. I haven't really accomplished much, but I kind of think that's what's missing, that lived experience. I faced some big challenges in my life. I'm about ready to celebrate 2 years sober from a 15-year addiction to opiates. And also, I struggle with mental illness too. So that's kind of my passion these days, is advocating for just people like me who have struggled, people, like us who are really having a hard time right now. Our world's in chaos. And so I think it's time to try to do something different. And that's really at the heart of, message of my campaign is just trying to find something different, an alternative.
And as you're running for the U.S. Senate, what are your legislative priorities?
Yeah, sure. Great question. So what I'm making the foundation of my platform is social infrastructure. When we talk about infrastructure, it's a lot about roads and docks and schools, buildings, those physical things. And so what I'm trying to advocate for is a different way to think about infrastructure. So, it's education and healthcare, of course, but it's also things like childcare. My mother-in-law has been running a daycare for 30 years. And so, as we try to come out of this pandemic, I think we're really starting to see what an important issue childcare is. When school's not there, there's a significant portion of our economy, struggling, trying to figure out what to do. And, there's just not a lot of resources out there. And then also, you know, things like, broadband internet. We have been talking, people have been talking for 20, I don't know, for years about it. And to me, it seems like a lot of talk. There's still a lot of work to be done. And I think, again, in this pandemic, we're seeing, like, that internet connection is crucial. Just to exist. Like, there's a whole digital America that I think everybody has a right to participate in. And so, you know, with things like education and healthcare, what I'm trying to advocate for is, you know, like here in Ketchikan, and I imagine up in the YK too, we face a lot of difficulty with like teacher turnover, and also in our hospital, you know, we rely a lot on traveling providers and stuff like that. So, you know, it's hard to really have a relationship with your doctor or the people who are teaching your kids when you never know how long they're going to be there, right? And so I think the solution to that is really focusing on developing, you know, at a very early age, developing kids who will stay in the communities or come back to the communities and work because, you know, they have those connections there. And so, let's see, I think, you know, an issue, even like food security, I think is one of those social infrastructure issues. You know, again, like up in the YK, I know, is it Raven Air, right? Is going mm-hmm. bankrupt, and we're looking at, you know, like it being broken apart or whatever, the planes and all that being sold off. And so, I mean, that really worries me about like what's going to fill that place. I think it's unfair. I mean, it's dangerous that rural Alaska has to, you know, you never know when the planes are going to come in. It's the same issue down here in Southeast. I lived on Prince of Wales Island for a number of years, and when the planes don't come in, like, they, you know, it's not just medicine and it's not just food, but it's things like checks, you know, money. I think the solution is that, to bring some stability, especially to air transportation, would be to, like, I think we need either a state-run air, you know, like state of Alaska-run airlines, or a public-private partnership. I think the state needs to step in and at least help, you know, transition this airlines into something different. I think the state being a partner on it would, you know, in the long term, whatever happens from that, I think that would bring a lot of stability. It's just, I don't know. And then, you know, keeping with the theme of social infrastructure, of course, the safety net, like we're seeing now how cheap it is. You know, it's underfunded. It's year after year after year, cut, you know, cut after cut after cut. And people suffer. People get sick. People hurt. People die because of those kind of things, because there's not help there when they need it. And so, you know, my own story, you know, Medicaid and food stamps, vocational rehabilitation. So they were all there to help me when I really needed it. And I wouldn't be here today without the safety net. But I will say it's hard too to try and get that kind of help, to get connected with the resources that I needed. Anyway, I feel like I've been talking
a lot. What aspects of the what you call the safety net of the American society would you like to strengthen, and how would you like to strengthen it?
Yeah, sure. You know, I think as far as healthcare goes, as far I'm an advocate of universal healthcare, whatever you want to call it, just the idea that somebody can walk into the doctor, get the help they need, the treatment, the medicine they need without money, without cost being part of that equation, you know? And so I don't know what the specifics look like. I don't know the numbers or the details. Nobody can know that. I'm just advocating for the idea. I think it's time. You know, food stamps, that's another issue. You know, a couple hundred bucks a month for an individual isn't going to go very far, especially the more remote you get, the less it goes, you know. And so, there's also gaps in the system, like people on Social Security, SSI. It's weird. Once you get on that, you'll see food stamps get reduced to almost nothing. And, you know, that's another one of those small loopholes I'd like to fix. I think, you know, housing, not just making housing available, but making sure it's high quality housing, safe housing. And so I feel at the end of the day, we've just been cheap in treating and taking care of the less fortunate, taking care of those who are struggling. It's at the end of the day, that's just what it is. It's a matter of resources, not putting the money in that we need. And we're seeing what happens. You know, it's almost like the whole country needed a safety net there, and it wasn't there. And so now, you know, we've got nearly 20 million people unemployed. So,
And as this pandemic is going on, you need to say it's revealing these gaps in the safety net. There's also a debate occurring about inequities in law enforcement. And what do you think that the federal role in this issue should be, and what legislation could support policing in rural Alaska?
Yeah, right. You know, I think just for me, I think it starts with I don't know where it starts. That's a hard question. There's so much that needs reform. I think on the federal level, you know, we've seen the Republicans and Democrats have both put forward their police reform packages. I think the Republican package relied too much on, like, voluntary compliance and offering a carrot to get action, you know, and I feel that the Democratic proposal, you know, it mandated change. You know, I don't know enough about like, you know, the fund the police movement to really say whether or not have an opinion on it right now. I feel like that is kind of a developing issue. I think policing in general, anywhere, but especially in bigger cities, I feel, it's almost like a problem. It's a mindset that needs to be changed about what the job of cops are. You know, we say cops serve and protect. And I feel that the protect part has been prioritized over the serve part, you know. So I like the idea of bringing in, you know, some counselors or mental health, like cops is almost counselors or psychologists, that we should be training cops to understand what people are like in a crisis, and to understand de-escalation instead of control the situation and protect. You know, I've had in my addiction, I had many encounters with the police, and, you know, been through the criminal justice system. And so, I don't know. I never personally had a bad experience about police, and maybe that's an illustration of part of the problem. You know, being a white, educated male, you know, I think that says a lot about why I never got in much trouble. You know, and then as far as, like, regionally to the YK, there's been a lot of discussion about the future of the role of the VPSO and the VPO program. And so, I don't know. I think, kind of, again, like, getting back to the theme about cops as, like, counselors, maybe, you know, in a lot of villages, there aren't mental health care. There isn't somebody there on the ground who can intervene in a crisis, right? You know, most mental health care is offered, like, through telemed or something in remote communities. And so, you know, a VPSO who has some psychological training, de-escalation training, who's aware of mental illness and addiction and who knows his or her community, like, we can throw money at that, at the problems with the VPSO program, but that's not going to do anything. It might even make them worse. So, again, I think it's
and
a change
Chris,
of
we
mentality.
Are out of time.
Yeah.
We're going to have to leave it there. Chris, thank you so much for joining us this morning. Chris Cummings is an independent. He's competing in the Democratic primary for the U.S. Senate seat. KYUK is inviting all Alaska's U.S. Senate candidates onto Coffee at KYUK. I'm Anna Rose MacArthur. Thank you for joining us. Grady, back to you.
That leaves me just enough time to remind everyone to not forget to be awesome to each other.